I'd like to begin, even though this is a Parsha Shir, I'd like to begin with sharing a story with you. There was a student who came to Machon Meir with a slight disability and a slight mental retardation. And a student who came to Machon Meir, and he had difficulty walking, maintaining his balance, but he did his best, and he learned, and he participated in classes. He pushed himself, and he reached the level that he was learning Daf Yomi. He would continually go to classes in Daf Yomi. He pushed himself, and he taught himself how to read in the Torah, and he used to lane here. He used to be the Baal Kori here. And in spite of the difficulties he had to overcome, he was a constant in our base medrash. He used to learn here, and his presence was felt. You saw a person who didn't have it as easy as everyone else does, and nonetheless was pushing himself and was learning. 2 months ago, they found the growth by him, and to make a long story short, 6 days ago he passed away. And shortly before he passed away, he was in the hospital, and a chassan came to the hospital. A young man who was supposed to get married that day decided that on the day of his wedding, he wants to go to his wedding out of chesed. He wants to go to his wedding after doing acts of kindness for people. Now, there is a custom to give poor people food on the day of the wedding, but this chassan decided he wants to give spiritual food on the day of his wedding. So the chassan played a violin, and he had a few friends who played musical instruments. And last week, this chassan came to the hospital, to the oncology ward, and wanted to make people happy on the day of his wedding. So he went room by room, and a lot of the people weren't interested. People were in bad shape. And finally he came to this young man's room. The young man was barely conscious. And they asked the family, should we play? Should we sing? Will it make him happy? And they said yes. There was one thing he used to connect to, that was music. So they started playing the song Rachim. And as they played it, he opened his eyes and he started waving them on. And he got excited, they got excited. The song Rachim went on for 20 minutes. This was one of the last times that he was conscious. I envy that chassan. I heard it from his father this morning. His father sitting shiva. We're beginning a parsha, Parshas Toldos. And in this parsha we shift from Avram to Yitzchak. Avram is still alive, and yet the parsha shifts focus from Avram to Yitzchak. Chronologically, Avram is still alive at the beginning of the parsha, even though the Torah discussed Avram's passing in the end of last week's parsha. When we read about Avram, we read about Chesed. And what we're going to learn about Yitzchak will seem to be a slightly different picture. Yitzchak has experienced the Akedah. He has extended his neck and been willing to sacrifice his life for the sake of Hashem. But we have to remember that Yitzchak is Avram's son. And that line of Chesed, that thread of kindness, of teaching people the way of Hashem, ran through Yitzchak as well. The Torah doesn't stress it as much, but we have to know that Yitzchak was Avram's son, and he continued Avram's way. Our parasha tells us how Yitzchak and Rivka didn't have children. They prayed to Hashem. Rivka became pregnant. She saw the pregnancy was very difficult. She asked what's going on, and God told her she has twins. When she gave birth, one was red, covered with hair like an adult. They called him Esav. The next one came out holding on to his heel. They called him Yaakov. They grew up. Yitzchak has an affinity for Esav, Rivka loves Yaakov, Yaakov's making some kind of soup, some kind of broth. Esav comes in, he's tired, he tells him, give me some of that, and Yaakov gives him, and Yaakov tells him, I want your rights to what comes with the Bechorah. And Esav says, fine, what do I need it for? And for a bowl of soup, Esav sells his rights to being the firstborn to Yaakov. There's a famine. Yitzchak travels down to Gerar, Plishti territory. He's headed southward to Egypt, to Mitzrayim, and God tells him, no, stay in the land. You don't need to leave the land of Israel. You'll be here, you'll multiply. And this is the first time we encounter God speaks to Yitzchak. The people ask him what's going on with his wife, and he says, oh, that's my sister. Rivka's very good looking. He's scared of getting killed over Rivka. And after a while, the king Avimelech looks through the window and he sees Yitzchak and Rivka. They're joking around like husband and wife. And Avimelech calls Yitzchak and he says, she's your wife. How'd you tell me she was your sister? And Yitzchak said, I was scared of getting killed if you knew she was my wife. So Avimelech says, that's terrible. How'd you do such a thing to us? We almost had a terrible sin because of that. So Avimelech gives out a decree that no one's allowed to touch him or his wife. And Yitzchak starts flourishing in the land, and he's very, very prosperous. So the Plishtim are jealous, and they start filling up the different wells that his father had dug. Avimelech tells Yitzchak, you have to leave. You're becoming too awesome. And Yitzchak leaves. He redigs the wells his father dug. And every time his servants dig a well, a new well, so there's a fight. The shepherds say, that's our water. And finally, he reaches a well that he calls Rehovot, that there's peace. God appears to him, and he tells him, don't fear, I'm with you, I will bless you. He builds an altar, he builds a mizbeach. Avimelech comes back to Yitzchak, and he says, I want to make a peace treaty with you. And we have a repeat of the peace treaty that Avram had, a seemingly similar and possibly redundant peace treaty with Avimelech. We'll have to discuss why it was necessary. Esau's 40 years old. He takes a wife and takes another wife, and these women are disturbing to Yitzchak and Rivka. As Yitzchak ages, he doesn't see well. He calls Esau. He tells him, go fetch me some food and make me delicious food, and I'll give you a blessing. Rivka overhears this. She calls Yaakov. She tells him, go bring me the sheep. I'm going to make your father the delicious food that he likes, and you'll bring it, and you'll get the blessing before he dies. And Yaakov says, how will I get away with it? I'm a smooth person. He's got hair. He's rough. My father feels me out. He doesn't see well, but he'll feel me. He'll see that I'm not Esav. He'll curse me, he won't bless me. And she says, don't worry, I'll take the curse. You go do what I tell you. So he does as she's telling him, and she prepares the food, and she gives him Esav's special clothes, and she takes the goat skins and puts them on his hand and on his neck, and he brings it into his father. And when he brings it to his father sees that he's speaking gently like Yaakov. So he says, how'd you get the food so fast? And he says, God help me. So he says, oh, he's talking about God. So he says, come, I want to feel you. Is it really you, Esav? So Yaakov is obviously trembling. He comes to his father, he feels him, and he says, you know, your voice sounds like Yaakov, but your hands are hairy like Esav. He didn't recognize him because his hands were hairy like Esav. So he tells him, are you Esav? Yaakov says, I am I. So he says, okay, give me the food and I'll bless you. He gives him to eat, he gives him to drink, and he says, come give me a kiss. When he comes to give him a kiss, again, he's checking him out. He says, gee, you smell like the field that God blessed. I smell Gan Eden when you come close to me. And then he starts blessing him. And he gives him the blessing that'll have bounty from the heavens and the earth, and nations will be subservient to him. He'll be master over his brother. Whoever curses him will get cursed. Whoever blesses him will be blessed. Finishes blessing him. Yaakov's on his way out. And Esav comes in. Yaakov has to hide behind the door. He's about to bump into Esav. Esav comes in with the food he's prepared. And he tells his father, Dad, get up, I got food. You'll give me a blessing, I'll give you to eat. I'll give you to eat, you'll give me a blessing. And Yitzchak says, who are you? So he says, I'm your firstborn, I'm Esav. So Yitzchak got scared. He says, then who brought me all that delicious food and I blessed him? Well, may he be blessed. When Esav hears this, he understands what went on. He lets out a bitter cry and he says, I want a blessing too, Dad. So he says, you know, your brother tricked you. He took your blessings. So Esav says, oh, that's why he's called Yaakov. Yaakov could mean okbah, crookedness. Twice he swindled me. He took my rights to the firstborn and now he took my blessing. He didn't leave anything over for me. And Yitzchak tells him, you know, I made him the master over you. And I said, all his brothers will be servants to him. I blessed him with all material wealth. And what can I do for you, Esav? If you're his servant, whatever I give you is going to be his. So Esav tells his father, what, you have only one blessing? Bless me too. And Esav starts crying. Now he's a 40-year-old man. What's he crying about? Obviously he knew the value of a blessing from Yitzchak. So Yitzchak tells him, you know, okay, may you have sustenance from the earth, from the heavens, and may you remain a free man even when you go to war. Your sword should stand by your side, that you shouldn't lose the wars you have to go to. And you'll be subservient to your brother, but if your brother starts sinning, so you'll overtake him. And Esav hates Yaakov for the fact that Yaakov stole his blessing. And he starts thinking, you know, my dad's an old man. When he passes away, I'll kill Yaakov. Rivka has Ruach HaKodesh. She finds out, God reveals to her what Esav is thinking. And she calls Yaakov and she tells him, your brother's already, in his eyes, you're already a dead man. So listen to me, I want you to go to my brother Lavan, to Haran, stay there a while till your brother comes down. When he comes down and forgets everything you did to him, I'll send word to bring you back. Why should I lose you both in one day? So Rivka tells Yitzhak, look, I see the girls that Esav brought home. My life is worthless with daughter-in-laws like that. If Yaakov takes a wife like that, what do I have to live for? So Yitzhak calls Yaakov, he blesses him, and here he gives him the true blessing. He tells him, you should have the blessing of Avram. That blessing was not given when Yitzchak was tricked. Now that Yitzchak knows it's Yaakov, now he gives him the full blessing. He tells him, you should have the blessing of Avram. You should have this land. The land that God promised Avram will go to you. And he sends him to Lavan. Tells him, go find a wife there. Esav understands the hidden message, that if his father sent Yaakov away for a wife from not from this territory, he understands his father doesn't approve of the wives he took. So he also takes wives not from that territory, takes from Yishmael's daughters. And that's how Parsha ends, with Esav's subsequent marriage to Yishmael's daughters. Now let's review the Parsha, try to understand a little bit more what's going on.
Is the Midrash that they married, that the Yishmael's the daughters married this?
No, it's in the Pasuk. It's the last Pasuk in the Parsha.
Really? The finale.
It's the last Pasuk in the Parsha.
The journey. Stalin and the Hitler.
We're going to begin with the end. The end of Kriyat HaTorah. When we finish reading the Parsha, so we have a tradition that dates back probably to the period of the first temple to read a section from the prophets called the Haftarah. That's a section with which we separate ourselves from reading Torah. That's the last part. To be maftir means to separate, to end. So we end off with the Haftarah. And the Haftarah for Parshas Todos is from the prophet Malachi. Now Malachi, our sages don't know exactly who he was. One opinion says that Malachi was Ezra. So we read the first chapter in Malachi, in which Malachi says, Ahavti etchem amar Hashem. God says, I love you, to the Jewish people. And the Jewish people say, why do you love us? Esav's our brother. What's the difference? We come from the same father, the same mother. Why do you love us? And God says, I love you. I love Yaakov. What's the answer? The question was why, and the answer is, I do. And I hate Esav. I'm going to destroy Esav ultimately. You'll see that Esav will think they could rebuild what I destroy, and I see that they're so wicked, I'm going to destroy them. They're going to be known as the nation that God is angry at. So the prophet, the end of prophecy tells us, Malachi, the last prophet, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi were the last prophets. They prophesied during the period of the Second Temple. And they tell us that ultimately we will recognize that God loves Yaakov. Something which obviously, throughout the period of our exile, was a little bit hidden. What is this love? And our parsha also seems to rotate around love. Yitzchak loves Esav, Rivka loves Yaakov. What's the connection between Yitzchak and Rivka? What's going on here? Seems like there are two forces, each one's working on his own. What kind of marriage did they have? So let's begin by discussing the word ahava, love. And we think of ahava, you love a person, you hug them, you kiss them, you're close to them. The Rambam tells us that the word ahava does not connote physical closeness. Ahava means that a person is spiritually, intellectually close to someone else. There are three types of ahava. There's natural ahava, natural love. A person will naturally feel love towards his children, towards his family members, towards himself. A person naturally feels closer to people of the same city as opposed to someone from a different city. This, what we call ahavat tivit, natural love, also includes the fact that we have a natural tendency to be attracted to certain people. You'll see two people playing poker, and you'll feel, gee, I want that guy to win. Why? Why do you like him more than the other one? You don't know. It's something natural that God put within us. Our sages said that Talvah ubnei chad mazal aninu, they probably were both born under the same mazo, the same constellations. We don't know why, but we have a tendency to have an affinity to people without any logical reason. That's all part of ahavat tivit, natural love. Then there's ahavat gufanit, physical love. That's men who say they love women, or people who say they love their partners. Something that really is physical. It's not true love. But we have a name for it. It's called ahava gufanit, physical love. And then we have ahava nafshit, spiritual love. Love that comes from the nefesh. And that is the love that a Rebbe feels for a student, or a student feels for a Rebbe, or the feeling that a person has towards people that he appreciates their wisdom, or David and Yonatan, we will learn next week, the love that was between them. That's love that's not contingent on nature. It's not contingent on anything physical. It's a connection between the nefesh, the neshamot of two people. And that is eternal. Notice that the physical is also called ahava. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, there's ahava shekluya bedavar. There's love that's contingent on something. It's also called love. It's called ahava, but that's called ahava gufanit. That's a physical love. That, once the person loses their beauty, once the person loses what they have to offer, then batel davar batla ahava. God is telling the Jewish people, ahavti etchem, I love you. And the love that God is telling us He has for the Jewish people is on the level of ahava nafshit. It's a connection that's, so to speak, between the nefesh of the Jewish people, and God doesn't have a nefesh, but it's a spiritual connection that transcends time or any physical boundaries or any physical occurrences. And God is telling us that He chose us and loves us in spite of the fact that when you look at the facts, so you say, Esav and Yaakov, they had the same father, the same mother, they came out of the same womb. What's the difference between Esav and Yaakov? Why should God choose Yaakov? God says, I love you. That's spiritual. We should remember this difference. Yitzchak and Yishmael came from the maid. Yishmael came from a different mother. But Yitzchak, he had one wife. And Esav and Yaakov were twins. They came from the same mother, same father. Our parsha is going to focus on Yitzchak. And Yitzchak, we saw, was willing to give up his life for God. And after he reached that high level, so Yitzchak wasn't interested in the physical world anymore. So even when it came time to get married, we don't see him running after a wife. Everyone else we're going to see takes care of themselves. Yitzchak doesn't take care of himself. He's not worried about that. His father has to take care of that, because that's not where his focus is. And even after he's married, so they don't have kids, Yitzchak isn't worried about that. He's not focused on that. He's got his connection with God. He's busy teaching people about the way of God. So his wife has to tell him, hey, we got to have kids. So she urges him on to daven. And then they both daven. Yitzchak davened opposite Rivka, meaning she stood in one corner and he stood in the other corner and they davened. So one thing we have to know is that when we're davening for someone, we don't have to mention their name if they're right there. Meaning you see a person, you want to daven about them, you daven about someone and who's in the same place where you're davening, you could say, God, please help him, please cure him. So they were davening in the same room, and it says that God accepted Yitzchak's prayer. Rivka was also davening. Why did God accept Yitzchak's more than Rivka's? Because Yitzchak was a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik, and Rivka was a tzaddikess, but her lineage wasn't so good. And this is something that it's a little hard to swallow, but we have to recognize it's a fact of life. When a person comes from strong roots, then he's got a certain strength. He's got something that someone else doesn't have. We can't change it for ourselves. We could change it for our kids. If we'll be tzaddikim, then our kids, God willing, will be tzaddikim and tzaddikim. Yeah.
And isn't it also the fact that a prayer from somebody for somebody is more powerful than if anybody is praying
no.
for his own sake?
The Gemara says, "Yafet tfilat achole al atzmo," that when a sick person prays for himself, God finds that very beautiful. It seems to be that on the one end we say you should ask other people to pray for you. Our sages said, ask other people to pray for you when you need something. But at the same time, Chazal said a person's prayer for himself is nice before Hashem. So you'll say she wasn't chola. Okay, maybe. I don't know how that works. There's more to it than that. We are going to see in our parsha and next week's parsha a lot of deceit. Rivka tricks her husband. She sends him delicious food. Yaakov, next week's parsha, is going to be a servant. He's going to be working in Lavan's house. And they're going to make a special deal monetarily how they're going to divide the cattle. And Yaakov's going to start doing tricks in order to ensure that he gets the better end of the deal. Esav, in our parsha, towards the end of the parsha, he makes believe like everything's okay. Rivka calls Yaakov and she says, "Hine Esav achicha, Esav, your brother, mitnachem lecha," he's making believe like he's been appeased with you, "lehogecha," because he wants you to have faith in your relationship so that he'll ultimately be able to kill you. So we see deceit. And our sages say that deceit began with Rivka, because Rivka came from a family of Lavan and Besuel. So that deceit revolves around Rivka. And that's why Rivka, who was deceitful towards her own husband, with good reason, will explain it. But at the end of the day, God accepted Yitzchak's prayer because Yitzchak didn't have that trait. Rivka brought that trait to the family. Deceit. Being cunning. Rivka...
Even if it's cunning for a good purpose.
So...
Is it full cunning or... It's...
This Medrash seems to understand. This Medrash seems to say that at the end of the day, they lost by it.
So how do you explain, say, Aaron?
Look, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, "Latet liftaim orma," that the Torah gives a person who's ordinarily trusting, it gives him cunning to discern, not to be so trusting. So you see, there is something important about orma. But there's a difference between orma and mirma. Those are two different things. Orma is cunning, and mirma is, I guess, a better definition is deceit. A person is supposed to be cunning. A person isn't supposed to be trusting of everyone. But to deceive other people, that's something else. Rivka gets pregnant, and the pregnancy is difficult. So she says, "What am I living for? Our sages say she would walk next to a holy place and Yaakov would be starting to fight to get out. He'd be attracted to the holiness. She'd go near a place of worship of idols and Esav would be fine to get out. He'd be attracted to that. So we see that from the womb already, they're created differently. So she says, what's the point? What's going to be here? Why did I daven about this? Why, if the pain is so much, what am I living for? And she asked other women, have you ever encountered such pain during your pregnancies? And they said, no. I didn't see it this year, but I seem to remember a Medrash saying she was the first one to have twins. So I don't know, maybe... I don't remember what the source for that is, and I didn't see it this year, but I seem to have that in mind.
Yeah. The punching inside the womb.
Well, they were punching around, so obviously it was very painful, and twins is heavier than one baby. So she went to seek out God. What does it mean she went to seek out God? One understanding is she went to Shem and Aver. She went to the tzaddikim and asked them what's going on. But that's a difficult understanding because, firstly, her own husband was a big tzaddik. Secondly, her father-in-law was a big tzaddik. So why is she running around to other rabbis? So the simple answer, according to Pshat, is that you'll find in your own homes, God willing, you guys are going to be big rabbis. So you should know that your wives are all going to go to other rabbis to ask their questions. That's a natural tendency of wives to ask another rabbi. It's a natural tendency of all family members. I was once sitting in a Beis Medrash and one rabbi commented to the other, he said, you know, my kids called another rabbi to ask a question. That rabbi opened up my sefer and answered them according to what I wrote. So why'd they have to ask him? He's looking at my sefer in order to answer them. So he was telling this to his friend, who's also a rabbi. So his friend told him, he said, what are you surprised at? Every rabbi's house works that way. So that's a natural tendency. So that's one understanding we could say here. But there's an understanding that says she went to seek God. What she was doing is she went to pray. She prayed to God. She said, God, what's going on here? I don't know.
Okay, see one thing real quick. All right, everyone got pizza. If you already ate dinner, please don't take a second piece because a lot of us didn't eat dinner.
Not yet. Don't take a second piece. Yeah,
wait for those who speak. If you ate dinner downstairs in the cafeteria, please don't have to take a second piece.
Are you taking questions?
Yeah, sure.
It's kind of interesting. On the one hand, we know that Yaakov and his brother are. Thank you. Yaakov and his brother are completely different. Yeah, diametrically opposed. As one does this for the shuls, and the other one does this for the places where I was at. But and when they're born, they're markedly different. One is red and the other is thick. But in one source it says that up until their bar mitzvah, they both were pretty yeshav. You know, one was definitely yeshav, and the other one was pretty much yeshav. So it seems a little bit contradictory. We definitely have hints on the one, but in another way, we say he had no outward manifestations of his Yetzer Hara taking hold of him until his Bar Mitzvah.
Let's discuss that when we get there. Okay? It's on the agenda. So God answers her, and he says, you have two nations coming out of you. How did God answer? So God sent the prophet. God either answered her through Shane or another prophet that came and spoke to her. And this is something the Rambam quotes in the Mor Nebuchim, that sometimes the Psukim say that God spoke to a person, and it doesn't mean that he literally spoke to the person. It could mean that he sent the prophet to speak to that person. This answers what we once discussed, that our sages tell us that God offered the Torah to every nation and all the nations refused it but the Jewish people. So I mentioned to you that there's a source that says that God sent a prophet to each nation. So according to this Rambam, that's also easily understood in the Midrash. It says that God offered it to them, but that doesn't have to mean that God spoke to them. It could mean that God sent a prophet to offer it to them. God tells you have two goyim in your stomach and two umim will come out of your intestines. Well, babies don't get born from intestines. You could say stomach, but what about intestines? What's going on here? So first, let's define the terms. What does the word am mean? What does the word goy mean? what does the word le'om mean? Or what does the word umma mean? So this is a good time to discuss this. The word am, which we ordinarily translate as being nation, generally refers to a group of people. We'll start with goy. We won't start with am. Goy refers to a group of people who live in the same area. Goy refers to people connected to a land. Am refers to a kingdom, a group of people who are together as a community for the general good, for what you gain by living in a community. So when we say a king, we say Ammo, his nation, because Am always stresses what they have to gain by being together. So they could be a nation. What do they gain? That they have a king, that they have an army. So the king, it's called his Am. But Goy always refers to the land. Goy doesn't refer to what they gain, but to the area that they live together. So that's why when we discuss lands, we discuss Goy. Goyei ha'aretz. The tribes are each called the Goy, because each tribe is situated in a different section of the land. So the word Goy refers to the area where they live. If they live together, they're called the Goy, geographically. If they have general gain from being united, then they're called an Am. Am refers to the fact that they're together to gain something from the fact that they're united. Vayinu le'am echad, Shechem tells Yaakov. We'll be one nation. What does it mean? It means we'll all look for the benefit of one another. The word le'om refers to people who have similar behaviors. People who are Yirei Hashem, God-fearing people, are called the Le'om. The sons of Aaron are called the Le'om. Le'om doesn't, they don't have to be living together. They could be scattered throughout different countries. Lamed Aleph Vav Mem. That's Le'om. And Uma is a part of a Goy, part of a nation on a land, Uma, that have an individual ruler. That's why the Midianites, it says that they had five kings. Evi, Rekem, Tzur, Hur, Reva. They're called the five kings of Midian. And Tzur is Rosh Umot Beit Av. He's the head of one of the different Umot. And Uma is like a state, for example. It's a part of a Goy that has a specific leader. Yeah.
What's the difference? We were in Am when we were in Israel, but during the Galut, we spread all over the world.
That's true.
What's the difference between Am and Uma?
Well, Uma has one king. Is people who behave in one way, but they don't have one king. So we're more like we were Yisrael throughout the Galut. And Le'om is a Goy that has one king and one set of laws. That's a Le'om. So what did you ask, Zed?
What is the difference technically between Am and Uma, I guess?
Uma is people who have chosen to behave one way and they have one ruler, but they're part of a Goy. Am could, and Uma could be part of an Am. Am is, so to speak, a nation, a group of people who live together so that everyone gains from the fact that they're living together.
You're also called the Goy Kadosh, right?
What?
Goy Kadosh. So these terms are...
Okay. What I'm telling you is one understanding. There are a few understandings. This is one definition. One breakdown of Am, Uma, Le'om, Goy. So Rivka is told she has two Goyim, two nations that will each inhabit different lands, and two Le'umim, two peoples who will have their set traits with their set rulers, their set behaviors, and therefore they will divide from once they come out of her. I have a friend, Yossi Breis, who pointed out something very nice. He said, in her stomach, so what does the stomach do? It combines all the food. So he told her, in your stomach you have two goyim. Right now they're like two together. What do the intestines do? They filter. They say this goes here, this goes there. So he told her, from your intestines, they're going to, just like the intestines divide, so too these le'umim with their different traits are going to be divided when they go out. Ule'om mi le'om ye'ematz. And one nation will have greater omets than the other. They will constantly be having omets against one another. What does the word omets mean? Yoshua is always told, chazak ve'ematz, be strong and have courage. Omets is courage. So each nation will constantly try to have courage against the other. And this is important. The Pasuk does not say that the Am Yisrael will have to fight Esav. It says that there will constantly be between Am Yisrael and Esav this inner courage that tries to arise within. Who's going to overtake? But not that there will necessarily be war. So long as we were successful, Edom always wanted to overcome us, and they were trying to get the courage to do it. They were constantly trying to strengthen themselves within. When Edom overtook us, so imaleah charava. Whenever the Navi discusses the city of Tzor, Tzor was an island that was washed out, and Tzor was a very wealthy island that merchants used to pass through to do business. And because many merchants would stop by, so they were an island that had a lot of money. They'd take taxes. And when the land of Israel was destroyed during the destruction of the first temple, so the prophet forewarns Tzor, you know, Tzor, you keep saying because Israel will be destroyed, so you're hoping all the merchants coming back from Israel will pass their wares through you, and you'll get wealthy out of that. Tzor said, I'll get filled from the destruction of Israel. When they'll be destroyed, I'll get full. So our sages said that, on one hand, there was an island called Tzor, but our sages told us that almost everywhere in Tanakh where the prophet discusses Tzor, Tzor is the capital of Esav, the capital of Edom. And Tzor is representative of all of Edom. And they said that that pasuk really is representative of our relationship with Edom. So long as we're successful, we keep the Torah, we're here in the land of Israel, and we're successful, Edom doesn't stand a chance. The second we start going down, so then Edom says, okay, now I could fill of what they lose. Yeah?
Where do we read about this island?
It's in Yeshaya. It's not. I don't think it's in any of the Haftaros, but it's in Yeshaya, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
So both Yishmael and Esav, which is represents, let's say, the Arabic world today and the Western world, they are both part of Shem, right?
Right. That's what Pat Buchanan once said. They call me an anti-Semite. Well, Arabs are Semites, and I don't hate Arabs. That's what Pat Buchanan said.
Where's the holiness in that? There, Shem was.
Shem had a lot of offspring.
Just one of them brought the Kiddushah. That's a symbol.
That's what we see each time.
So where is Yachat Elcham in this world? And where,
that's for a different class. We have to even what you assume that Yishmael are the Arabs and Edom are the Christians. That also has to have a class unto itself. So, Rivka gets this prophecy that the elder one will be subservient to the younger one. The younger one is supposed to overtake. It's interesting to note that when God refers to Yaakov, He doesn't call him Hakatan, the smaller one. Rivka and Yitzhak will constantly refer to Yaakov as Hakatan, the small one. But God doesn't refer to him as Hakatan. He calls him Atzair, the younger one. People always ask me, is that Achicha Hakatan? And I always say, Atzair mimeni. He's younger than me. He's not. I don't know if he's smaller than me. He's younger than me. That's age. Katan in Hebrew connotes also being smaller, not just age. So the Medrash says, God says, why do you keep calling him the small one? Yaakov isn't the small one. He's the younger one, but he's not the smaller one. So Rivka is told this prophecy. And the question is, why didn't she tell Yitzchak? We're going to see that Rivka knows the future. She knows that Yaakov is supposed to lead in the future. And she doesn't share this with Yitzchak. So there are a few understandings as to why Rivka kept this prophecy to herself. One understanding is that she was embarrassed. Here, she had a question. She got an answer from a prophet. Her husband's a prophet, and she's going to go tell him what the prophet said. So she was a little bit embarrassed to get the answer. Another understanding says that Rivka thought, well, when God gives prophecy, He gives it generally to all the prophets. So, if this prophet got it, then Yitzhak also got it. She gives birth, and the first one comes out. He's Admoni. He's red. Why is it important that he's red? So our sages say this foretold that he'd be a murderer. Our sages tell us that when a person is born under certain constellations, then he's going to have the tendency to spill blood. And when a person has tendency to spill blood, he has a choice how that's going to come to be. Meaning a person could be a murderer, a person could be a shochet, a person could be a mohel. He could do good things with that tendency. Edo, Esav is born and he's red. Guys, I'll tell you what. I can't count.
It's negative sign and turn it into a positive, yeah?
I wouldn't even say that it's a negative sign. A person is born with a certain tendency. David HaMelech was born, he was red. Shmuel saw him red, so he said, he's like Esav. And God told him, no. A heavenly voice came out and said, he's got beautiful eyes. What does it mean, he's got beautiful eyes? It means that he will kill, but he will kill according to the beautiful eyes of the Sanhedrin. He'll kill according to Halacha. His job is, he's born, he's red. Yeah, he's gonna have to fight wars. That's his tendency. But he's not going to kill at random. He's going to kill whoever he's halachically supposed to. So Esav is born, he's red. He's got that tendency. The question is, what's he going to do with it? Yeah?
But we still see that the face, when he says about, when Hashem talks about David, he talks about his eyes, about something physical about him, so that it's sealed to a certain extent.
Didn't follow?
That it's sealed, that David will go a certain direction, and it uses his eyes as the example, as the reason for it.
So every time a person has a tendency, the question is, what's he going to do with it?
Yeah, but,
So with Esav, there's no such description, it seems to be from
Esav is just red.
You see, and I've seen explanations that when he was born, he was red and hairy, which denotes his eventual kind of...
Right, that's what Rashi says.
So, with the Bechira, there really was Bechira?
He had Bechira, he had a choice. Well,
he said that because he was hairy and because he had certain physical things, was implying his future. Okay.
We will discuss it more in Shmona Prakim. On Thursday nights, we advance in Shmona Prakim. The eighth chapter focuses on this. How each person has a choice, what's going to be his future. So when we get there, we'll also discuss this. But bottom line, Esav had a choice, was it going to be him or not? Our sages say that Rivka was supposed to have all 12 tribes. Rivka was supposed to have 12. She said, Lama ze anochi, how am I going to last to ze? Ze is gematria 12. She said, how am I going to last 12 pregnancies like this? And our sages say that Esav took out her womb. Esav said, I'm having a hard enough time with one brother in this world, I don't need another 10. So Esav could have been one of the 12 Shvatim according to this, if she was supposed to have all 12 Shvatim. So, tribes. So he had a choice which way to go. He comes out all hairy, people see him hairy, and they say, this guy is all made, Esav. Every animal that's born could stand on its feet, could eat, could do what it has to do. By the way, how much do animals advance through their life? They're born, they're like Shor ben Yomoka Rusho. An ox, the day he's born, is called an ox. He's an ox. He'll grow, but he doesn't advance very much in his capabilities. Man is born, he doesn't have to eat, can't masticate. He's born, can't walk, can't crawl, he needs help. But he advances. His whole life is advancing. Man is called a mehalech, one that advances. God tells the prophet in Zechariah, V'natati lecha me'alchim ben ha'omdim ha'ile, I will give you the ability to advance between all these that are standing. Zechariah sees angels, and God tells him, yeah, but you have the ability to advance. Angels are called omdim, they're standing. They might have a very high level spiritually, but they're standing. They don't advance, they don't detract, usually. You could advance. That's the job of man. Yaakov is born, he's called Yaakov. Yaakov stresses the Akev. In the end, he's going to make it in the end. It might take time, but he'll keep advancing until he makes it in the end. Esav is born, he's complete. He's got his hair, he's ready. That's the way Esav is going to be. Not much is going to change. He might grow a little bit like animals grow, but he's like a complete man. It's not a compliment. It compares him to the animals. Yaakov is born and he's holding on to Esav's heel, and they call him Yaakov. Who names Yaakov? God names him Yaakov. Yaakov should have been called Akov. Grabbing the heel, God adds him a letter from God's name, Yaakov. Yaakov could mean he will be there at the end, like the heel at the very end. Yaakov could mean like Ekev Tishmoon, ultimately in the end he will get his sechar. Yaakov doesn't get sechar right away. Life's difficult for Yaakov. Yaakov could also mean a term of okba, cunning, deceitfulness. Esav looks at Yaakov and he interprets his name and says, oh, he's the deceitful one. But our sages tell us that Yaakov is stressing the fact that in the end, the only nation that will remain is Yaakov, as the Navi says. God says, I'll destroy all the nations and with the Jewish people, not. They grow up. And until they grow up, no one could really discern which way each child is headed. They did have their tendencies. But until they grew up, you couldn't really tell which one was going which way. Esav was developing his traits throughout the 13 years. And he knew what he was doing wrong, but no one else could know. When they grew up, then everyone recognized who Esav was. It wasn't that the first 13 years Esav was an innocent guy going to yeshiva doing what Yaakov was doing. The first 13 years Esav was developing these traits. Our sages tell us that when Esav was born, he was red. So his father said, there's something wrong with this baby. I can't do a bris milah for him. So he said, I have to wait. That's what the halacha says. A baby's born red, a baby's born yellow. We wait to ensure that the circulation of blood and the blood's krisha, how do you call it? Blood stopping?
Clotting.
Fully develops in a baby. You don't do a bris milah right away. So Yitzchak waited. Esav was 3 years old, and Yitzchak said, okay, now I've waited 3 years. I see he's not changing. Must be this is the way he's going to be. He's going to be red. That's his skin color. He doesn't have a medical problem. But Yitzchak said, you know what? If I didn't do it at 8 days, so already wait till he's 13 years old like Ishmael. When Esav's 13 years old, Yitzchak calls him over. He says, happy birthday, son. It's time for a bris milah. Esav says, no way. No way. What? Me? No. And our sages say that Esav never got a bris milah. Esav refused. 13, he said, no, Dad. So at 13, you start recognizing who Esav is. Esav starts being a hunter. The word for hunter in Hebrew is tsayad. What does the word tsayad stem from? From the word tsad. Tsad is a side. When you're hunting, you always go to the side. You have to hide. You have to catch the animal. Esav knew how to do that. Esav also knew how to be cunning. That's why to be cunning is also you're being deceitful. Just like you have to go to the side to fool the animals to be able to hunt them, so too when you want to be cunning, you have to be deceitful to hide your intent. What? The Hebrew word tsad means a side. Tsayid is a hunter. Tsayad is a hunter. Tsayid is hunting. So Esav knew how to be deceitful. He tricks his father. And Yaakov, he was a simple, he used to learn. Rav Pesach Zatzal used to say, he used to quote the following Medrash. The Medrash says that Esav is like a pig. Pig, whenever it eats, it lies down and shows you its split hoofs. Our sages say that a pig is always saying, look, I'm kosher, I got split hoofs, look at my split hoofs. But inside, he's not chewing his cud. It's not a kosher animal, a pig. So Esav was the same way. He'd show you the good things he did, and deep down inside, there were things that were not kosher. So Rav Pesach used to say on this Medrash that if you'd see Esav and Yaakov walking down the street, you'd see two Jews, let's say in our terms today, both have payas, both have their tzitzis sticking out, both look like good kosher Jews. But one of them has payas that are a little bit longer than the halacha says. His tzitzis are hanging down a little bit longer than they have to be, and that is Esav. Because he wants to show everyone I'm kosher. He's not doing it because the halacha says to do it. He's doing it because he wants everyone to see he's kosher. So that's Esav, the one who looks extra kosher. Yaakov was doing what he had to do.
Wait a second. Let the group get the idea that we about Mehudar, that we have in situation an obligation for a Jew to rise above.
There are things that there's hidu, and then there are things which you don't gain anything by. There's no, you don't have to have tzitzis longer than 12 tefachim. You want, you take a little bit longer in case it gets cut, you'll have it. But 12, I'm sorry, I said 12 tefachim, 12 etzbaot, 12 thumb width. So they grow up and everyone sees which way each one's headed. And Esav has a special affinity for Esav. Yitzchak has a special affinity for Esav. But Rivka, she has her love for Yaakov. What's going on here? So Esav used to bring Yitzchak food. Yitzchak was an only child. He was used to having good meat, good wine. And Esav, the one thing Esav knew how to do well was kibbut aveim. So Esav, he said, my dad likes good meat. I'm going to get him venison. I'm going to go hunt the best animals for him. He'd feed his father well. He brought his father what his father was used to from home. And Yaakov was learning. So Yitzchak recognized Yaakov. He recognized that Yaakov was the tzaddik. That's why we see that when Yitzchak initially gives the blessings, the first blessing that he thinks he's giving Esav, he doesn't tell him you're going to have the land of Israel. He doesn't tell him you're continuing the blessing of Avram. That he does at the very end of the parasha. He wasn't planning on giving that to Esav. But what did Yitzchak have? Yitzchak saw that Esav is feeding him. And the tzaddik always wants to pay back what he gets in this world. You do him a favor, he wants to give you something back. So Yitzchak always felt like he wants to give back to Esav, because Esav is constantly bringing him his good food. Yitzchak is sitting Shiva. His father Avram passes away. So Avram is making him lentils, because when a person sits Shiva, we give him round food. You could give him lentils, you could give him bagels in the United States, they give eggs. And the idea is that death is cyclical. People are born, people die. And just like a circle is closed, an egg is circular, it's closed. A bagel is circular, it's closed. There's no opening. So too, a person, after he loses a relative, the first thing he has to know is to be quiet, like not to open his mouth. Because the first thing a person feels when something bad happens to him is he feels like revolting against his creator. So we give him something round to remind him, right now you shouldn't talk. Digest it, and with time, that's part of Nicham Aveil. Nicham Aveil, when we come to comfort, to console a person, what we're coming to help him do is be able to live with the fact that God took this relative away from him. So Yaakov is preparing these lentils for his father, for Yitzchak. And Yaakov hasn't finished cooking them. Vayazid Yaakov nazid. Yaakov boiled this boiling lentils. He hasn't cooked it. It's not cooked. It doesn't say they were mevushal. They were nazid. They were boiling. Everyone knows when you cook, the first step is you boil it. Afterwards, you have to let it cook. And Esav comes in from the field and he's tired. Why is he tired? Well, he's had a busy day. He murdered for the first time in his life publicly. He raped a girl that was engaged to marry someone else. He served Avodah Zarah. He decided he doesn't believe in God in the world to come. Esav's had a busy day this day. This is the day when he's become a public Rasha. He killed Nimrod on that day. Our sages say that Nimrod, there's a whole medrash about how Nimrod got the special coat that God made for Adam and Chava. When Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden and they ate from the Eitz Hadas, so they were embarrassed that now they had no mitzvahs, now they could recognize that they're naked. So God made them a special garment. And that garment had special powers. So it was passed down and it was stolen and it came back, and finally Nimrod got it. And Esav wanted it from Nimrod, and Esav was hunting, and Nimrod said, what you doing in my territory? And Esav said, I'll take you on showdown tomorrow. And this was the day when Esav was supposed to take on Nimrod. And Esav was scared. So he comes to Yaakov, he says, brother, comes to his rabbi, he says, tell me, what should I do? And Nimrod's got that coat, he's going to win me. So Yaakov said, here's what you do. You come to the fight, and you say, boy, it's hot. Wait a second, Nimrod, let's take off our jackets, and then we'll fight. And you take off your jacket, naturally, and he won't think twice, he'll take off his jacket, and then take him on and kill him. So Esav does just that. He comes to the fight, he takes off his jacket, says, Nimrod, wait a second, let's take off our jackets. So he goes to take off his jacket, Nimrod turns around to take off his jacket. As he's taking off his jacket, Esav kills him. So he's murdered for the first time, and he takes that special jacket that was in the Garden of Eden, that was God made, and now he has it. So he's coming in from the field, he's tired, he's had a busy day. And Esav tells Yaakov, hey, I see you got some red stuff cooking. Give me some of that. And Yaakov sees the guy's famished. So he gives him a little bit to eat. He gives him some bread. He gives him to eat. And then he tells him, the way you're behaving, you're going to have everything that comes with being firstborn. You're going to have the continuation of Yitzhak and Avram. You're going to have the rights to be a Kohen, to sacrifice before God. You know, if you're sacrificing before God, you can't get drunk. You're not allowed to walk in there drunk. You're not allowed to grow your hair. The person who's a Kohen, the Kohanim used to shave their hair once a month. Their hair couldn't be longer than a month's length. So he tells him, you're going to do that? And Esav says, what happens if I don't perform? So Yaakov says, you get the death penalty. You're not allowed to perform without that. So Esav says, what do I need this for? I'm going to die anyways. You give me the lentils, you could have the rights to being firstborn. So Yaakov says, fine. He gives him the whole pot. Esav says, wait, I'm tired. I open my mouth, you pour it in. So Esav gobbles it down and he walks out and he says, ha! Yaakov got stuck with the rights to firstborn, and I got a good supper. And everyone thought, everyone looked at Esav and mocked him for the fact that he gave up those rights for a pot of lentils. That's why he was called Edom, the one who everything's read about him. His skin is red, his nation is red, his land is red. He'll ultimately get punished by one who's red. The prophet, when he describes Esav's punishment, he says, Madu Adom Lil Bushecha. He sees a man running and he asks him, where are you coming from? Why are your clothes all red? So he says, oh, I was just at the wine press dancing on the grapes in Edom, which is a metaphor for the fact that Edom will be destroyed. So he's saying, so to speak, my clothes are red. Madu Adom Lil Bushecha, why are your clothes red? Everything about Esav is red. Even the Malach, who is coming to describe how Esav will be destroyed, his clothes are red.
Is he really so stupid?
What was stupid about it? From his perspective, why does he want to get the Bechorah? Why does he want the rights to the firstborn? In this period, here there's Machlokas Rambam Ramban. The Rambam says that before Matan Torah, it was a social norm that the firstborn got double. The Ramban says we have no indication that before the Torah says so, that the firstborn gets the right to double. So what was he giving up? He was giving up the right to be a kohen. What does he need to be a kohen? That wasn't his way of life anyways. So there's a famine. And Yitzchak says, well, what did my father do when there was a famine? He went down to Egypt. I'll go down to Egypt. He starts traveling south. And he comes into the Plishti territory. And God tells him, you go down to Egypt? You can't just do what your father was doing. Sometimes people see a rabbi doing something and they say, if it's good for him, it's good for me. Mistake. Doesn't work that way. What's good for him might not be good for you. Are you on his level? Rabbi Feinstein, when he put on his tefillin, used to make the blessing on Tefillin Shel Yad. And we all know that when we make the blessing on Tefillin Shel Yad, we have in mind that it's for Tefillin Shel Rosh as well. So the minimum you could wrap Tefillin is wrap them around the hand and around the finger three times, without seven wrappings around the arm. So being that when we make the blessing on the Tefillin Shel Yad, that blessing also covers the Tefillin Shel Rosh, the Tefillin on our head. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, when he put on Tefillin, he'd make the blessing on Shel Yad, do one wrapping around his arm, three wrappings around his finger, put on the Tefillin Shel Rosh, and make the blessing on them, and then go back and fix the Tefillin Shel Yad. His son doesn't do that. That's not a big deal to put on Tefillin this way or that way. But his son says, my father was on his level, I'm on my level, I don't have to do what he does. Well, we make the blessing by a bris. So we make a blessing, Borei Pri HaGafen, and then we make special blessing about the bris. So, according to many opinions, after you make the Borei Pri HaGafen, you should take a sip from the wine. And then make the whole blessing about the bris. It's two separate things. Rabbi Feinstein, when he was when he would be at a bris, so he'd say Borei Pri HaGafen, and he'd purposely spill a little bit on his finger, lick off his finger. You know, when you make a first blessing, Berch Sanenim, you could take any taste worth. Meaning, if you see a piece of chocolate, you dip your finger in the batter. You want to lick it, you have to make a blessing. First blessing, Birchas Hanenim, has to be on anything, any amount. You don't need so long as you can taste it, you make a blessing. So what he would do is he'd say the Borei Pri HaGafen, spill a little bit on his finger, stick it into his mouth, and continue the blessing. When he passed away, so his son Rav Reuven Feinstein was standing at a bris once, and they honored him with that blessing. So he asked his big brother Rav Dov Feinstein, he said, which way should I do it? So he answered him, you're not the father. You do it like everyone else does it. It's not a big deal to spill on the hand. Yeah, but you have to be on that level. Okay. If you're so pious and everything else that you perform, so then you can take on things of piety. Okay. Yitzchak was told by God, just because your father went down to Egypt, that's not what's fit for you. You, according to your level, you're on a higher level in certain respects. You were offered, so to speak, as a sacrifice. You can't leave the land of Israel. A man who's as holy as you, you can't go down to Egypt. Can't just do what your father did. You stay here and you'll be successful. Yeah?
So I'm relating the ways of the tzaddikim that we see in the Torah as a constant.
It didn't follow?
From your teachers. Is that on a generic level?
You have to look at Chazal. In order to learn from the Avos or Tanakh, you have to look at Chazal. That's what we stressed in our introduction to learning Tanakh. There are a lot of messages that we have to learn from the Avos and from Chazal. You need Chazal's guidelines in order to decide what to learn out. An example I always gave, which someone asked today, is we see that Avram is in the process, he's about to talk, God starts talking to him, and then he sees guests. So he tells God, just a second, let me go get the guests, and then he comes back and talks to God after he takes care of the guests. Halachically today, if a person is in the middle of Shmona Esrei and someone's knocking at the door, you're not allowed to stop Shmona Esrei and answer the door. You can't. So you say, but Avram was talking to God one-on-one. Isn't that not a much higher level than our Shmona Esrei? You cannot derive halacha from learning Tanakh. You have to have Chazal's guidelines even to derive simple messages from Tanakh. You want to learn good traits, so that we see from Tanakh. And even there, ideally one should work with Chazal.
Question.
Sure.
Why is it that Yaakov happens to be the one that's cooking his father and this lentil stuff for his father's morning? Because usually it's Esau that brings him the food.
Maybe Esau was too busy that day. I don't know. But we see that Esau had a busy day that day.
It's getting cold. Seems that perhaps that it's a coincidence that happens to be a turning point.
Our sages say that Avram passed away, so you shouldn't see Esav's going up to fame as a murderer and everything else he did. That's why Yitzchak stopped seeing. Yitzchak became blind. The Navi takes Esav to task for all this. He says, "You hurt your father. You hurt your grandfather. You hurt your mother." Esav, because Esav was going that way, so his grandfather had to pass away 5 years younger than he should have, because God had promised him, you'll die in a good way in your old age, so he shouldn't see his grandson behaving like this. Yitzhak became blind, so he shouldn't see what's going on, and people shouldn't see him going out and say, he's the father of that murder. And Rivka couldn't have any more kids thanks to Esav. Did a lot of harm.
Also, why did Esav not want to give birth to 10 more children?
Esav said, I have trouble enough with one brother. Who needs 10 more? Same thing that Ham said. Yeah?
I know a little bit about this, but maybe I'll just ask, why you say he was, it says in the Midrash, and I think in the Chumash directly, that he was born red, and he had all these, okay, he was born red. Well, that means that he's going to become evil in the future, whatever. So, do we ever hear a story about someone being, born with signs of being evil and then overcoming their evil inclination? And
there's a medrash that there was a king who was considered very wise and very kind and very good, and people had heard about what a wonderful person he was. So one king said, I want to see what this person looks like. So he sent his painters out to that king, and his painters came back with portraits, and he called his wise men and he said, analyze these portraits, tell me what kind of person is that person. And they looked at the portraits and they said, that person has a tendency to be a murderer, thief, all bad traits, easy to anger, unkind, unfair. So he said, someone here is lying. Either my painters didn't really paint that king, or my wise men are worthless. So how will I know who's telling the truth? I'll go see for myself. So he travels out to see that king who has such a reputation for being a wonderful person, and when he gets there he says, I see my painters were right, must be my wise men are worthless. So that king sees him and he asks him what's going on. So he tells him, I came to see what you look like, because he tells him the whole story. So he tells him, well, the truth is everyone was right, your painters were right and your wise men were right. My natural tendencies are really to be a miserable person. My natural tendencies are to be a murderer, to be easy to anger, to be unkind, to be unfair. But I've overcome those tendencies. So they're both right. They saw my natural tendencies and they saw, and they painted a true picture. There are people who quote this medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu. doesn't seem like there's any source attributing it to Moshe. The Medrash exists, but not about Moshe. So people can overcome the tendencies that they were given. People are obligated to overcome the tendencies that they were given, and we'll expand on it in Mitzrayim and Shmona Prakim. So Yitzchak shows up in Philistine territory in Gerar. They ask him about the girl. He says, she's my sister. Notice that Yitzchak doesn't get her taken away. Avram did, Yitzchak does not, because Rivka is not taken away. Avimelech peeks in and sees that something's going on here, so he says,
she's still alive.
Avimelech seems to be a common name for the king. Just like Pharaoh, Avimelech was named the king. So he asks Yitzchak, what's going on here? Huh? So Yitzchak tells him, I was scared we'd get killed. He tells him, okay, stick around. Yitzchak sticks around, and people say, you know, we're better off with the dung from Yitzchak's animals and not the wealth of Avimelech. Because they recognize that blessing has nothing to do with whether you have gold or silver. It has to do with whether God is with you or not. And Avimelech sees that Yitzchak has amassed more cattle and more wealth than he has, and he tells Yitzchak, get out of here. That you're disgracing me. You're more wealthy than I am. And then Yitzchak has all these fights with the different shepherds every time his servants dig a well. So the shepherds say, that comes from the stream that we use. That water is not an underground stream. That water is coming from our stream. If you take that water, you're stealing our water. And Yitzchak is a little bit scared. He sees he had trouble with Avimelech. He sees he has trouble with these shepherds. So God shows up to Yitzchak and he says, I am the God of Avram. Don't worry, I'm with you. I will bless you. Things will be well. And this is something we should remember. A, that Yitzchak got scared. It's no chokhmah not to be scared. People sometimes say, I'm courageous, I'm not scared. No, you see, everyone was scared. Avram was scared, Yitzchak was scared, Yaakov is going to be scared. Ashrei Adam Efachet Tamid, the Pasuk says. Praised is a person who's always scared. Smart person is scared. Secondly, we see that a person can sometimes be shaken by having one after another bad occurrences. A person should remember that our forefathers also did. Very often things come one bang after another, and a person feels like, I can't get up. Look, first I'm kicked out of Philistine territory for no good reason other than the fact they say, you're doing too well, you're being too prosperous, get out of here. And then these shepherds are giving me trouble, and Yitzchak says, you know what, they might just gang up on me, Avimelech, with the shepherds. So God tells him, don't worry. And Avimelech has second thoughts. Avimelech says, you know, I kicked them out of here, but he might think that because I kicked him out of here, he doesn't have to maintain the treaty that I made with his father. I made a pact with Avram. He shouldn't attack me and I shouldn't attack him. Well, maybe he'll consider this breaking the pact. So Avimelech takes his chief general and he comes to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak says, what'd you come for? You hated me. You kicked me out of your country. And they say, look, we recognize God is with you. We want to make a pact with you. We want to make a pact and a curse for anyone who undoes the pact. We didn't do you any harm. We did only kindness with you. What were they telling him? So they were saying that, you know, the lion got a bone stuck in its throat. So he let out a roar. He said, I need someone to take the bone out of my throat. So along came a stork. He said, I got a long beak. I'll take it out of your throat, but what will you give me? So the lion says, whatever you want, I'll give you. So the stork says, fine. If you'll give me a gift after I take it out, I'll take it out. He sticks his beak in, sticks his head down the lion's mouth, pulls out the bone, and then he asks the lion, what will you give me? So the lion says, you kidding? You had your head in my mouth and I didn't eat your head off? I gave you your life. What more do you want? I gave you so much. So that's what Avimelech was telling Avram. Said to him, we sent you away in peace. You were in our country. We could have harmed you. We didn't do anything to you. You owe us. We were kind to you. You have to keep up the pact we made with your father. Yeah?
I asked this question. This like bothers me. Avimelech, right, you said that Avimelech is a generic name for a king. So they don't even mention his name. Why do they mention the name of the general? Like, there's so few names mentioned in the Torah, and they like go as far, and he's not mentioned again. He really serves no purpose to mention his name, but they just mention his name. They give him like eternal, like, everyone knows it. But we read about his name all the time. Nobody.
There's a source that says that he's the one who had the idea to make these treaties to begin with. he's mentioned because it's his idea. It was him. They say it over there by Avram that Fichol was mentioned because he's the one that really gave this good advice, make a pact with Avram. And maybe there are those that say that over here the Pasuk is telling us it's the same general. He's the one that came with him in Avram's time. We have to know that everything we read has hidden meanings as well, especially names. Even the name Yaakov, so our sages broke it down. What does the Yud stand for? 10, 70, 100, 2. What does each one represent? So on the simple level, that's one understanding, but there are deeper levels. So he makes a party for them, and they make a treaty, and they leave. Then his servants tell him, we found the well, and they call the name Shiva, and the city's name is Beersheva. There's a lot to be discussed. These wells have deep Kabbalistic meanings, but we don't have time or knowledge to go into that. I don't, at least. Esau's 40 years old. He's been spending his life chasing women wherever he could find them, taking women when their husbands aren't around. And now he wants to show that he's like his father. He wants to show him kosher, just like the pig that chose his split hooves. So he says, Dad got married and settled down at 40. I get married and settled down at 40. He doesn't look at what kind of life his father's led until now. And he takes a woman who's an idol worshiper and he tells her, you change your name to Yehudis. Because Yehudis will make everyone think that you believe in one God. It revolves around Yud Kei Vav Kei, God's name. Yehudi means one who doesn't believe in idols. So you were changing your name to Yehudis. It's not a good way of fooling people. He takes two wives, and these wives, they serve their idols, and they pain Yitzhak and Rivka. Now, Yitzhak gets blinded from them. Why does Yitzhak get blinded from them and Rivka not? So the Midrash says, if you take a bone, you make a vessel out of it, and you take earthenware and you make a vessel out of it, and then you take the two vessels and you collide them, bash. What's going to happen? The earthenware vessel will be destroyed. The bone, the vessel that's made of bone, it's going to be fine. So you had over here two bone vessels and one earthenware vessel. Anyone know what I'm talking about?
So Yitzhak is the
earthenware. Right. Yitzhak is earthenware. Us men were made of earth. Man was made of earth. Rivka, what was she made of? She was made of a rib. She's made of bone. What are these women made out of? They're also made of bone. So the Medrash is using this metaphor, so to speak, to say that women are stronger than men. So the Rivka could stand up to her daughter-in-laws, but Yitzchak couldn't. That's something you guys should remember. If you ever have to have business dealings with women, so you're much better off letting your wife deal with it. Seriously. Because the Medrash already tells us that women can take women on, but when a man tries to take on a woman, usually the woman will win. We're not talking about a fight. I mean, a boxing match, right? So, Esav's wives serve to their idols. They cause Yitzhak to be blinded. Another Medrash says that when Yitzhak was lying on the Mizbech, he looked to the heavens and the heavens opened up. And there was a heavenly revelation. And Yitzhak looked at that, and that caused him to be blinded. Until now, Avram was alive. So, with the merit of Avram, Yitzhak wasn't blinded. Now that Avram passed away, so the things took their toll. The fact that he looked at a heavenly revelation he shouldn't have looked at. And he calls his son Esav, he says, I want to give you blessing. What blessing does he want to give him? He wants to give him a blessing, just like what he's given him. He says, you've given me food, I want to bless you with food. Everyone knew that Yitzhak's blessing was worth something, because God had told Avram, you could bless and you'll be your blessing all back. So Esav knew the value of Yitzhak's blessing. So he tells him, go, I want you to shecht me a good animal the way I taught you how to shecht, make it kosher the way it should be. Go fetch an animal, don't steal an animal, get me a good kosher animal, I don't want theft over here. And after I eat it, I'll have, when a person feels good, then God can descend upon a person, I'll have the inspiration to bless you. Esav says, I'm getting that animal. If I don't find one hunted, I'll get one, I'll steal one. He doesn't care. He heads out to hunt, and God sends an angel. So Esav traps one animal. He says, I want two. He goes out to trap a second one, and the angel comes and frees the first one. angel catches the Esav catches the second one, comes back to the first one, it's gone. So he says, okay, sets up another trap, catches an animal, goes back for his first one, and that's gone. And he's spending his time cursing away, can't figure out what's happening. Well, God didn't want Esav to get back so fast. So God was sending Malach to detain him. Rivka overheard this conversation, and she tells Yaakov, I heard your father telling Esav to bring him some delicious food that'll bless him because he feels like he might die any day now. Listen to me. I'm ordering you, go bring me sheep. Your father gives me 2 sheep every day. Tonight is Pesach. We're going to make 2 offerings and give them to your father. I know how to make the food that he likes. You'll bring it, he'll eat it, he'll bless you before he dies. Yaakov doesn't want to do this. Yaakov starts crying. He's over 40 years old. He's a grown man. His mother's telling him what to do, and he doesn't want to do it. And she says, you listen to me, go do it. He says, but if my father feels me, he'll curse me and not bless me. His mother says, don't worry. If you do this, your father knows you. You're not the type of guy to do this. He'll know I'm behind it. If he'll curse anyone, he'll curse me. He won't curse you. Go. So he goes and he takes it, and she cooks it the way she knows he likes it. She dresses him. A 40-year-old man has to be dressed? Yeah, he didn't want to do it. So she dressed him. She puts the pieces of goat skin on his arms and on his neck. And she gives him the delicious food in his hand. Why does she have to put it in his hand? Because he doesn't want to do it. He stands there crying, says, Ma, I don't want to do it. She says, I said, do it, you go do it. He walks in, and his feet melt beneath him. And God sends 2 angels, Michal and Gavriel, and they both stand at his side and they support him. He's not ready to do it. And God says, you got to do it. You got to get these blessings. The Medrash says that God purposely made Yitzhak blind so that Yaakov will get the blessings. Rivka had gotten a prophecy that the one who was supposed to be successful was the younger one. Yaakov didn't know that prophecy, as we discussed before. So Rivka said, okay, until now I couldn't tell him, but now he's about to mess up. He doesn't know. He's not supposed to give it to Esav. Yitzhak had thought, Esav will have worldly things. Who needs the worldly things? Yaakov's a holy man like me. He doesn't need that. Rivka said, no. A good Jew also has to have worldly things. He needs that too. He's got to have those blessings as well. And so she pushes Yaakov in, and God has his hand in it, and Yaakov walks in. And he speaks respectfully to his father. He says, please sit up, come eat from what I've hunted so that you will bless me. And Yitzhak asks him, how'd you catch something so fast? He's scared. Maybe Esav brought something, stole something. So he says, God helped me out. And Yitzhak says, come here, I want to feel you. Is this you, Esav? Yitzhak's suspecting something's going on. The Gemara asks, how could a blind man live with his wife? How does he know it's she? The Gemara says that a person can recognize someone's voice. Person is able to recognize a voice, and that's why Yitzchak, that's why a blind man could live with his wife, because he could recognize her voice. Some people could mimic someone else's voice. So either Yitzchak wasn't hearing well, or Yaakov had a very similar voice to Esav, or else Yaakov was able to switch his voice. We're going to see in next week's parsha that we have a similar situation, another set of twins, Rachel and Leah, that Leah takes Rachel's place, and she could fool Yaakov. And the Medrash says that when Yaakov wakes up in the morning, he says, Leah, how'd you do this to me? How'd you do this? And Leah said, how'd you do it to your father? So, it's a Medrash.
I always heard that Yitzchak like really knew what was going on.
I don't know. Doesn't seem that way. Not from the Psukim. Yitzchak says, Akol kol Yaakov. The voice is Yaakov. The hands are the hands of Esav. Our sages say, this coined what would be in the future. Akol kol Yaakov. The voice of Yaakov, that's our strength. The sword, the hands, that's Esav. Whenever we used to fight in elementary school, in Cheder, the Rebbe always used to say, Hayadayim yedei Esav. The hands are the hands of Esav. It's not your job to be fighting. Why are you fighting one another with your hands? Yeah. And that's always been our strength with the voice. Jews always succeeded with the oratory, with their verbal skills. wasn't our might, it was our brains and our ability to talk, to pray, to speak to Hashem. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. There are a lot of midrashim on this pasuk, but we saw at the beginning of the week, you guys remember? The midrash we saw about Beitar. So the midrash says, in which generation was Akol Kol Yaakov? The voice of Yaakov was crying out because of the hands of Esav. That was the generation of Bar Kokhba. That you had over 100,000 people murdered in Beitar. We discussed probably over 100,000 kids murdered in Beitar. So they were crying out to Hashem. That was Akol Kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, because of the hands of Esav. So Yaakov deceives his father and says he offered him wine. It doesn't say that Rivka gave him wine. So our sages say that God sent an angel with a flask of wine from Gan Eden, and that's what he brought to his father. Esav knew his wives were thieves. They were just like him. So Esav didn't keep that special cloak that he got from Nimrod at home. He kept it by the one he could trust, by his mother Rivka. So Rivka told Yaakov, you wear that when you go into your father. That's Esav's special clothing. So when Yaakov walks into the room, he's wearing clothing that came from Gan Eden. He's got a flask of wine the angel gave him from Gan Eden. So Yitzchak says, I smell Gan Eden over here. Yeah, he's wearing Esav's clothing. He smells Esav. He smells the Gan Eden of those clothing. He gives him a kiss. He smells his clothing and he blesses him. And he gives him the blessing. Yaakov's got to leave. And Esav's on his way back. And they're about to bump into one another at the doorway. God sends an angel, the Midrash says, that made Yaakov invisible. So Yaakov's standing behind the door and Esav walks in. And his father asks him, who are you? Because when Esav walked into the room, Yitzchak felt Gehenim walking in. He saw Gehenim opening before.
Gehenim?
Hell, perdition. So he said, I'm your eldest son, I'm Esav. And Yitzchak got scared. He said, who brought me all that delicious food? When I ate it, I felt like I got everything I could want. I got Gan Eden. May he be blessed. Yitzchak automatically recognized he did deserve it. God tricked me. God had a hand in this. And he said, may he be blessed. May Yaakov be blessed. And when Esav heard this, he let out a roar. Our sages say, because Esav yelped and cried over here, we were punished in the generation of Purim. Part of why Mordechai went out into the center of town and cried out was because of this crying of Esav. There's a machlokes rishonim over here whether what Yaakov did was correct or not. We represented one side. There is an opinion among the rishonim that says that Yaakov gained nothing from doing this. He only lost from this. He gained Esav's enmity, his hatred. And there are rishonim that say, Rivka told Yaakov, don't worry, the curse is on me. So one of the rishonim say, yeah, that's the way women talk. Don't worry about it, it's all on me. What do you mean it's on me? If he curses him, he's finished for life. So we represented the other side. You should just know there is an alternate side.
Why did Yitzhak curse Esau instead of...
He didn't curse Esau.
He cursed Yaakov?
He didn't curse anyone.
But he said something like... I don't remember what exactly he said, but he said like... He said you are indeed my son Esau. He said, I am. He said, serve me and let me eat of my son's game and my soul. I bless you, turn me eight. Then his father texted him, come close, please kiss his son. So it's when Esau comes and says, I'm the real Slim Shady. He says, Esau heard his father's words, who wears the one who hunted game brought it to me in particular? Oh, okay.
Maybe we'll continue, Zev?
Okay.
Okay, I want to end with one thought. Says Yaakov was Ishtam, a whole person, Yoshev Oalim. The word yeshiva could mean to sit. The word yeshiva could also mean to be detained, to spend time at something. The Torah is stressing that Yaakov was Yoshev Alim. He detained himself in the tent to learn. He would learn and learn and learn and learn. He didn't just learn for a day, a week, a month, or a year. Guys come to the Machon and they feel like they have the world to conquer. And usually what happens is after a short period of time, you suddenly realize that the world is much bigger than you thought. There's much more to learn than you thought until now. But what also happens after a certain period of time is a person realizes he's learned so much in a year or even half a year that a person feels like, hey, I'm 10 steps forward from where I was. I got a lot. It's true. Baruch Hashem, people do grow a lot here and in a short amount of time. You have to remember that you're starting from very little usually. So, you know, like they say, one is more than a million times zero, right? If you start from almost nothing, so then every advancement is going to be a lot. If a person wants to succeed in learning, he has to do like Yaakov did. He has to spend time learning, to be Yoshev O'adim. It's not enough to learn a day, a week, or a month. Lifelong, a person is supposed to be learning. A person is supposed to take time. I understand people do have to get jobs and people do have to move on in life, but you also have to recognize that it's not enough a year or two at the Machon. You're coming to a world where everyone else has had 12, 14, 16 years of Jewish education. You can't make that up in a year or two. You can't. We're doing our best to make up as much of it as we can, but you have to know that you have a lot to make up. So it's not enough the time that you spend here. You have to continue afterwards. For some guys, it works to listen to classes on MP3 or listen on the internet. It's very nice. Ideally, you should also have a Rebbe wherever you are. You should have a Rav. You should have a Shir you attend. If a person wants to move forward, if a person wants to build a good Jewish home, he has to be Yoshev Olim to frequent the tents of Torah. It's not enough the time that a person spends here. Yeah, you guys are getting tools here to build your life. But if you really want to succeed, you guys have to stick with it. So the Machon is just the beginning. Yeah.
So Yoshev means also bound?
Detained.
Detained.
Yeah. To spend time at a place is yeshiva.
It also means to dwell.
We'll just end with a practical point. We find, yeah.
What did they study before Torah was given?
So there are many midrashim that say that they had versions of the Torah. God did reveal a lot of the Torah before the Torah was given. And they had other laws. They had the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And the Gemara says that Avram Avinu had 400 chapters in his Masech Avodah Zarah. They had to learn all the details of Avodah Zarah to know what is permitted and what isn't. So they had a lot to learn from what they had. We see that Yitzchak didn't know who Esav was. Yitzchak, the simple understanding is he didn't recognize how wicked Esav was. People call me about you guys, and I have a lot of nice things to say, and I do. But you should also know that I add a sentence. I always say, I can't know what these guys are really like. Because as much as I love the guys, and I feel like we have an excellent connection, our connection is here in a classroom. And you can't really know a person from a classroom. You can know a person as a friend and as a roommate. Why am I telling you this? Because when you check out the girls, you should know, don't believe the rabbis. I always tell people when they call me about Shaduchim, don't believe the rabbis. A rabbi could say all the nice things in the world about a person, but you don't really know the person. You don't know. I can't know you because all I know is what I see here in the classroom. So I recognize it. And I'm telling you the same tip when you check out a girl. Just like Yitzchak could be fooled by Esav, Esav would come and tell him, how do I take off a tithe, a miser, a tenth, to give the poor from the salt? Yitzchak said, who has to give a tenth from the salt? But then he thought to himself, wow, my son is worrying about giving a tenth of the salt to the poor. Must be he's a very pious person. Yeah, Esav knew how to fool him. You know, I'd ask questions that focused on a detail when really he wasn't keeping any of the laws. Anyone could be fooled. And especially a rabbi who's giving a class. When a person attends a class, he's interested in what he's learning, or he's not, but he might as well participate. Doesn't mean anything about him. When you want to check out a girl, don't ask her rabbis. You could ask, but don't give it a lot of weight. Ask other people. Ask her friends. Ask other people who know her.
When
her friends do not live alive,
I don't buy it. Sorry, Yosef, I got experience that goes for many years. On this one, I don't buy it. Even a rabbi who's close to a student will not necessarily know what is Midusa. I would give 80 to 90% chance that a person will not know. Okay, and that's after experience. I haven't spoken to all rabbis. There are those who know their students very well. Sometimes I tell guys, you know, she had such and such as a teacher, and she's an X-ray machine. She knows her students like the palm of her hands. It's enough that a student sits by her an hour, and she can tell you everything about her. There are people who are like that. I sometimes do recommend to talk to rabbis or rabbits and the teachers, but the majority do not. So I strongly recommend, if Yitzchak could be fooled by Esav, so then we shouldn't expect more from the rabbis of today than Yitzchak. Yeah.
Where was Nevuah here?
No,
what?
Where was Nevuah with Yitzchak? How comes?
So God purposely concealed it from Yitzchak, either so as not to pain him, or because part of the heavenly plan was that Yaakov should have to be the underdog fighting up in order to get the blessing, or for some other godly reason. The Mefarshim discussed that. They discussed why didn't God really reveal to Yitzchak what was going on. But for some reason, God didn't want Yitzchak to know.
I think one reason could be analogous to why Yitzchak wasn't allowed to Egypt. He's not allowed to come into contact with the awareness of the evil of his brother. And that if it does, he might become cynical. He might be, start to bear a grudge. He might develop these character traits that his level of holiness can't sustain.
Okay, maybe. Who knows? Tom?